This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
For if you weren't here earlier, my name is Tyler Morgenstern. I'm the Assistant Director of the Carsey Wolf Center. And it is once again my great pleasure to welcome our guests for this evening, Angela LaPrette and Lindsay Watson. So we're so delighted. Also, just before we start, another round of applause for our wonderful performers at the top of the show tonight. Yeah. So we have lots to talk about. There's so much to talk about with this film. And so I just want to start right at the top. So Angela, this is such a, in so many respects, it's such an ambitious project. It tackles a really difficult and thorny period in Hawaiian history, and one that, if it's known, is known in a particular way and perhaps a skewed way. You made this film under COVID restrictions, you made it under really severe constraints, and you took on a lot of narrative and sort of world-building challenges, making it predominantly in Olelo Hawaii, and really committing to a certain kind of cultural commitment to the world of the film. So I wonder if you can just sort of reflect a little bit to get us started on how this project came together amidst all of these challenges and how you came to be attached to it in particular.
Before I do, can I just say a couple things?
Yes, of course.
Because I'm back to UCSB and I was here 38 years ago. This place wasn't here. A lot of things weren't here, but I have to just really, there's a couple of shout outs, really important people. One who was someone in my life, I think everyone knows him, Professor Emeritus Chuck Wolf here, who just retired. I think he retired, I'm not sure. But he really, 38 years ago, there was, you know, we had no cell phones, we had none of that. And it was my formative years during my college years that really became who I am today and what I remember and what he taught. I didn't even know what film studies was. As a Hawaii girl coming, you know, from UH, and I was able to transfer here. And everyone's like, oh my God, you're gonna love UC Santa Barbara, it's on the beach. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm from Hawaii, okay. Tar and, you know, all that wonderful stuff. But I just wanted to really just thank you for, and the reason why I'm here is I brought my daughter on a college tour last year. And saw Chuck, we sat down and talked, and I told him about this film and that I'm from Hawaii, he knew that. I live in LA now, but and just the timing of it, and he presented it to Tyler and everybody. And so I want to say thank you to, you know, your team, Patrice and Emily, and you, Tyler, and you really did your homework. And and he's amazing with his, if you hear the Olelo Hawaii, he's got the pronunciation down. But thank you for having us, you and your staff and everybody. Sorry, I just had to say this because I'm just really honored to be back. And thank you again, Chuck, for, you know, I've become a filmmaker because of him. Also, our executive producer is here, Mike Frank, if he wouldn't mind standing up. And yes, thank you. Thank you. We have never met, so Lynn's and I have done a few of these. And so thank you. Without you, we wouldn't be here. So thank you for being here. Anyway, I'm sorry. So going back to the film, okay, I hope you enjoyed it. It was 2020, COVID. And, you know, the film industry, if you all know, is one of the industries that sustained during COVID. And so we were the first film to go in Hawaii. David Cunningham, the director, and John Fusco, as I'm sure a lot of people know John is, but John had visited Hawaii in the 80s, and him and David, the director, were friends, and they would always talk about this story, and David wasn't aware of the story, and then and I think it was 2000s when P.E. Lenny's memoirs came out is when it really hit them to go, oh my gosh, you know, it was written in English, and prior to that, it wasn't really reflected in a way that made Ko'olau look like a human being. It was more a negative aspect of leprosy and all this. So anyway, they decided that that's when they wanted to do something about it. They had worked together before. And then for me, so they were in it for many years, I think at least 6 or 7 years working on it. And they had asked me about maybe 8 years ago to produce it. And I said, I can't, for there were certain reasons. And there were some announcements that came out that there were so Hollywood actors in it and all this, and it was like, oh, that doesn't feel right, you know. And then during the pandemic, they came back, and the EP Noah Hamilton came to me and said, Angie, I know you know, blah blah blah, and would you do it now? So I said, look, it's let me read the script. I hadn't read the script yet. It was a beautiful script. Nobody was working. It was so, as you folks know, making a film is so difficult already. But making an independent film is so hard. And but my heart has always been with independent filmmaking because of stories, the stories that can be told. So the challenges we did face were actually the low budget, very, very low budget, period piece, Big Island. We shot this on the Big Island, which is hard because most of the crew come from Oahu. And if you know Hawaii at all, but the production hub is Oahu. And then COVID.
Minor.
And,
little
thing. Yeah, and it was interesting because even the unions didn't know. I was really adamant about making it union.
Right.
No one was working. We brought over our crew. We had about 30 crew, 99% local hire, including the cast. And I'll let Lynn talk about the casting. But we shot it in 16 days. And
murmur.
Yeah, yes. We had 16, you heard that right.
the key is having a really good team. Some, you know, people you trust, and that's what I did, is I brought the team together, you know, from our AD. I was the UPM as well, and we just, you know, we were lucky to find this retreat on the Big Island. It was like a yoga retreat, but it had no TV. It looked really pretty online.
Yeah.
But when we got there, it was kind of like, oh, okay. But there was it was perfect for what we had to do because we couldn't go anywhere, right? As you folks know, the COVID guidelines at that time were just new. And even with the state, like anyone flying in had 10 days of quarantine. We couldn't afford that, you know? So we worked with the then Lieutenant Governor, who is governor now, but he's from Kohala, which is where we shot, and he helped modify, along with the film commissioner, modify the quarantine to 5 days. So we had to do a lot of things that we never did before, and we got on the phone with the unions, DGA, SAG, and IATSE to figure out, how do we do this film? And because you had to have the distance, you folks remember the 66 feet distance, and you'd have to, you know, all this stuff, and masks, and we had all these interesting things coming out, breathing, and so our wardrobe people actually got very creative. And because, as you saw the film, we were able to build some of the masks into the costumes, but we tested every day. You know, it was crazy. I think it was 3 times a day.
Oh, God.
Our budget for the COVID alone was $250,000. It was so new to us. It was like, what? And we're on the Big Island. Only one lab did it. You know, yeah. It was. But we were shooting we were shooting about a pandemic in a pandemic. So it was like history repeating itself. Yeah. You know. Yeah. So anyway, that's how it came together, and we had about 30 days total to prep and shoot. 16 days shooting. And we're going to get into language in a bit, which Lindsay can tell you about. But that's how the origin kind of started, yeah.
And Lindsay, I wonder for your part, how you kind of came to this project in particular. Was it through a connection with Angela? And I'm curious as well, I mean, the story of Ko'olau and Pi'ilani is sort of, it's not sort of some obscure story. I mean, this is sort of a known story to a certain degree, even though the memoir comes out relatively late. So I'm wondering, how familiar were you with this material or with the narrative in general and with the character or the figure? And what was it like to sort of step into that role as a young actor?
Yeah, so I got attached to the project because Angie was the producer on my first movie I did, actually, which was also in Hawaii. Yeah, I was super lucky that my first breakout project was a movie with Netflix called Finding Ohana, and I got to film in Hawaii, and that was like the child version of what I jumped to. It was like a total flip. I started in this like young family comedy, really light, thrown in a few Hawaiian words, and then boom, right to this. It was pretty crazy. But yeah, I had such a great time filming that with Angie, and it was such a blessing when she reached out during COVID. Again, we weren't working. We were trapped in her house, and I get the call, and they're like, hey, we're doing this. We want you for it. And as soon as I read the script as well, I was shocked, double shocked, because funny enough, I was born and raised in Hawaii. I went to Hawaiian school. I never heard this story. I call up my friends. We're all from Hawaii. And I'm like, do you know Ko'olau Pi'ilani, this story? And they're like, no. I was like, yeah. I was like, so I was really shocked. I kind of gave them a little background on what was the story in the script. And we were all just kind of thrown because we would have expected that we would have known this. So kind of in that moment, I realized that this was my grand opportunity to take my love for film and acting and my love for my culture and kind of merge the two worlds and really get to put this story out there, because how is it that I was born and raised there, surrounded by the culture, and I've never heard this story before? And then, you know, when I kind of dove into the story and realized, I break it down in this simple moment of, this is when the Hawaiians fought back in our hardest time of history. And so much of that time of history, it's always very dark and negative from our point of view. We didn't ever see, you know, the Hawaiians be able to have these fight back type of moments. So when I realized, I was like, that's what this story is. And I was like, and that's why we've never heard about it. Because I'm like, they don't want to know that the Hawaiians fought back. And, you know, in my view, Pi'ilani prevailed. Like, she did what she needed to do. She was going to protect her family. That ohana is everything. And she did that. And you know, I think they didn't want us to know that, which is why the story's been kind of not so open in Hawaii. And so now knowing that we put this on film, and this can live forever. And not only that, the second language, I mean, second layer of that is the language, which is huge. I'm not a fluent speaker at all. Was not going into this movie. I had 2 weeks to learn the language. So it was hard. So jumping to the point of what was it like jumping into this role? Once I realized who Pi'ilani was and what she went through and what she did for the Hawaiian people, that was a massive weight on my shoulder. My immediate feeling was like, I don't know if I can do this. You know, we as Hawaiians, modern day Hawaiians, I think we immediately question, am I Hawaiian enough to do this? You know, jumping into the language. We have a lot of movies who've come to Hawaii that want to try to take on the culture or use us as a backdrop. And we as Hawaiians, we are tough on them. You know, if you're going to use our home, our land to tell a story, we want it done right. We want the proper representation. And a lot of time that's missed. The people who do it, they don't care. I knew taking on this level of responsibility of telling not only a true story of a true person, but in our language that I wasn't fluent in, I was scared. Also, the little sly point is I was booked on the role, flew to Hawaii. I was in my 2-week quarantine. And that was when I got the call that they were changing the script to Hawaiian, because originally it was written in English.
Oh, really?
So I actually auditioned. I went through the process doing it in English with slight olelo Hawaii. We threw in a line every now and then. And then when they talked to our cultural advisors, who were our guides through this whole process, they brought up the point, and they were very adamant, if we're going to tell this true story, the only proper way to do it is in olelo Hawaii. At this time, this period of time, Hawaiians, when they talked to Hawaiians, they spoke olelo Hawaii. They didn't speak English. So if we're going to tell this story and put it up there, they want it done right. And so, which I was all about, I was afraid of me doing it, but I kind of had this scary moment. I almost jumped ship. I was talking to director David, and I was like, I don't know if I am. I don't know if I'm the girl. And he was like, we picked you for a reason. Jason had the same thing. We both almost held hands and jumped ship, because it's scary as a Hawaiian. You know, we take pride in our culture and our language. So taking it on like this in a short amount of time was what stressed us out. And we kind of just had this moment together where we're like, let's do this. Let's take pride of Hawaii and, you know, our Hawaiian-ness and do our part. And so jumping into this, we spent hours and hours. We were lucky that we were able to each get our own olelo Hawaii teacher, Kumu. So they were able to spend hours with us to learn. And every day was just learning the language, because we had to learn what we were saying and then know how to memorize it and this certain types of pronunciation and the emphasis. And then we had to learn how to act it and be present in the moment. And then I had to learn what Jason was saying to me as well, right. So I knew how to react to him. So it was like so many layers going on in an actor's mind. And then there was a lot of physicality. Yeah. I'm climbing, I'm running, we're barefoot, straight up barefoot, you know, on this land. So it was a lot in 16 days. Yeah. But it was truly, it was something that in the moment, it was like a whirlwind. I couldn't even like stop to breathe. Uh-huh. And then when it was done, Jason and I will always say that, like, last day when we wrapped, we looked at each other, we're like, we did it.
Yeah.
Like, we did it. Like, so it was such a crazy thing. And then seeing the film come out and get a positive response from Hawaii, it was like, that was when I took my breath.
Yeah.
That was when I was able to take the breath because I just wanted to do right by it.
Yeah, I mean, something you mentioned that I thought was so interesting, and it does actually show up in the film briefly, that this is a period where, I mean, the Hawaiian language was suppressed and repressed, and there was many attempts to educate it out, as we see early in the film. There's a clear repression and a preference for English under the new government. But there was a really vibrant Hawaiian language public sphere. There were Hawaiian language newspapers and a Hawaiian language print culture, like through the 19th century, even amidst all this repression. So the fact that that's kind of the lingua franca among the Hawaiian characters is like very, very clearly of its moment. And I think that's really wise. And just like I don't even know if this is an interesting question, but I'm just curious about it. So Pi'ilani's memoirs come out in English in the 2000s. Were they previously available in Hawaiian? Do you know?
Yes, so that's what it was. So that's actually for David and John what was the turning point, because John had heard the story. Every print of this from the Hawaiian perspective was in the Hawaiian language. So he couldn't read that, you know? So it's like he heard it word of mouth and then was never able to really fully understand the complexities and the depth of the story when, I think it was 2001, when the book was finally translated from Pi'ilani's words herself. And like, as they say, like the most proper translation of like how poetic she spoke. Because a lot of those lines that I speak are straight pulls from the book of her very words. So that was when it kind of started to get them rolling on actually diving into the story, and John really was able to understand the story in English. So that was the start point.
It's also just to mention the little boy spoke fluent Hawaiian.
Oh, yeah, the only one in the whole cast was the little boy.
And he would teach you guys once in a while if something was wrong. But I think it was his auntie or his mom, both of them. We had cultural advisors. We had to, obviously, from the Big Island. And that's how we were able to keep it authentic. And sorry, I probably went ahead of your questions, but Tyler, but it was really important to hire, you know, we always believe when you do a show about anywhere you go, it should be authentic and hire local and just always, you know, they know best. I mean, really, but this was all obviously because we had to do it in Olelo. And most of the actors did not speak Olelo anyway. The majority of them didn't, but the little boy was fluent.
That's great. We were, through this question of language, we really are talking about the writing of the script. And you mentioned that it was originally written predominantly in English and then it pivoted to be in Olelo. But I just wonder if we can talk about the script a bit. So we mentioned that the script is written by John Fusco. And John Fusco, you might know some of his work, if not by name. I mean, he's written a number of films that are really sort of broadly Westerns. So he wrote Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Yeah.
Any spirit fans in the house? And he's written a number of films in that vein, right? In that kind of frontier world, rural, semi-rural world. And it occurred to me watching this film in preparation for this event a couple of times that this really does, in broad strokes, read like a Western. A lot of the iconography of like the sweeping landscape shots, there's very, I mean, in a really pitted and heavy way, the narrative engine of this film is like the new sheriff in town, like a new legal order. But at the same time, it's a frontier space where what's legal and what's not legal is very hazy and fuzzy, which is very much a part of the Western tradition. But it does this inversion of the Western as well, where in traditional Westerns, indigenous characters are often either peripheral or silent or exoticized. Indigenous language is often reduced to war cries and whoops and all of these sorts of things that are egregious and racist. So I'm just wondering if you can talk to us, Angela, a little bit about working with John on the development of the script and the sort of genre approach to this film. I mean, it's a historical drama, it's a family drama, but it is in a certain way a Western. So I just wonder if you can reflect on that.
Yeah, Kola was kind of considered a Hawaiian cowboy.
A paniolo.
So I like I said, I came on a little later, but John and David took years to develop it. And, mm-hmm. and when David started, you know, working with John, John has a love for Hawaii. Mm-hmm. he was back there all the time, and he still actually wants to do more. Mm-hmm. But it was more about the characters and what David and John always say is, you know, it was time to talk, to have the mother's tongue mm-hmm. be told, be shown, be heard. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, for them, it was that time. 2020 was the time when they called and said, we have 2 months to do this. You know, seriously, it was like mm-hmm. that kind of call. And by the end of the year, we had to be done. There was mm-hmm. a certain reason why. But they were really focused on the ironic timing, or just coincidental, you know, again, history repeating itself. Right. And that was a time to do it. We had mm-hmm. to go and tell this story. Mm-hmm. That's what they kept telling
yeah.
us,
yeah.
you know. Okay. But I don't know if that answers your question.
John just yeah. like, he loves his Westerns. I mean, the guy yeah. just, I mean, and if you knew him in real life, he is a walking picture yeah. of that.
He was in Vermont too, I think.
Yeah, on a ranch.
Yeah, yeah. But, I do mean, feel like Jason Lee's costuming is basically John Fuster's yeah, outfit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They share the same hat. Yeah, yeah. They exchange. But no, I think that's such a fun question of that idea of the swap, you know. Mm-hmm. It that's one of the biggest things I loved about this film. Kind of like I said, I realize this is the moment in our history where we were like the ones that were fighting back, even mm-hmm. though we're being suppressed so much, everything taken away from us, we still, it shows the pride of the Hawaiian people, the heart of the Hawaiian people, the strength of the Hawaiian people, that they were still able to fight back. So having the control in the filmmaking of this to really show it from the Hawaiians' perspective, because there were a lot of accounts of this that show Ko'olau is the bad guy, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of the English written colonizers speak of this, was that he was this bad guy and he came and he was hurting people. So until Pilani's true story from, you know, the wife's mouth, the Hawaiian's mouth, was mm-hmm. told, there were a lot of misconceptions of this. So knowing that we had the correct story and had this medium to be able to show it and have Hawaiians be the lead, you know, as a current modern day actress, it's still that struggle of auditioning for roles and getting to go out for things. And yeah, am I just going to have to be the pretty hula dancer girl type of thing mm-hmm. always? My goal is that it's not that. And being able to make films like this, I look at this film as kind of starting to kick the door open for other Hawaiian films, historical films or modern day films, but just more real Hawaii, who we are, what we went through, showing our language and not just the aloha, mahalo that people yeah. see, you know. It's like there's so much depth to, I mean,
Airport
most
Hawaiian.
People who watch yeah. this, yeah. they've never heard the language before,
right.
but beyond
yeah.
that. So it's cool that John, who isn't from Hawaii, has no Hawaiian blood, took on this responsibility with the help of all these people, mm-hmm. you know. And the film, I mean, from my understanding, was written really kind of big Hollywood box office at first in true
yes.
John style, but the yeah. kind of beautiful part of COVID that happened was that we didn't have a lot of money, we didn't have a lot of time, so the script went like this
right.
and this and this, and it ended up bringing it down to the heart of the characters,
That's
the stories.
That's why I was attracted to it.
Yeah, yeah. It was quiet, you know. There's mm-hmm. silence in this movie that's really heavy, that you can feel that and we, you know, we talk about that's how it was back then, you know. There wasn't all this distractions and phones and TVs.
Right.
We as Hawaiians would sit in silence and in company and talk mm-hmm. and that's how so much of our history is passed down, was, you know, olelo, just speaking mm-hmm. to each other. So John, really, the fact that he allowed the script to get to this point where it's really stripped down and
right.
from the Hawaiian's point of view and showing the strength, it was like awesome. We'll love John forever for that.
And it comes down to trust, you know.
Yeah.
And that was one thing David and they kept saying, is trusting the team, mm-hmm. you know, because he never came to set. He wasn't ever on set.
John
wasn't. Yeah.
Right.
We do Zooms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting too. Back then it was like, oh, we're doing a Zoom.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the beginning
chemistry
of Zoom.
Read on Zoom. Okay. But
no
yeah,
such thing as chemistry
weird.
On Zoom.
Yeah,
weird.
That was the weirdest thing, right? You remember that?
It was very strange.
But he never came on set, and he's a wonderful person, by the way. So kind. And but anyway, yeah, it was a trust factor that, you know, we would do this the right way and be authentic and do it right,
yeah.
you know.
Well, part of that transition for paring the script back and changing the point of view, we've talked a little bit backstage, really depends on a number of people that you work with, Angela, as cultural consultants and cultural informants. So I just wonder, just for the benefit of our audience, for people who might not know that,
mm-hmm.
area of work in the industry, if you can explain what it means to work with cultural consultants and the kind of work they do on a project like this.
Yeah. So for Hawaii, you know, obviously we're very significant to us living there. And maybe I should start with a project that I worked on, my next project I've been working on. We had 10 cultural advisors. Mm. So to explain how that works is, even on Hawaii Five-0, when I was a producer on Five-0, we had one cultural advisor. And basically what that person would do is would read the script, and you can't really get into the story, you know, and say, well, that's not what really would happen, because that's not what Hollywood wants, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, they're there to make sure that certain storylines are accurate or respectful, and it's hard to say authentic in more of the modern day shows. Mm-hmm. You look at Magnum and, you know, and NCIS Hawaii, and I mean, it's you know, that's not what it's about. But when you get a show like this, even Finding Ohana though was really great, because the director was really about casting Hawaiians or locals, mm-hmm. and also learning about the culture. Mm-hmm. So what you do is, you know, depending on how much in the script there is about the culture itself, that's when you really decide, okay, who's going to be right for this project, because there's a lot of Hawaiian cultural advisors, if you know that, if you're from Hawaii. And no one's right or wrong, it's just more about who's right for the project. Mm-hmm. So like Lilo and Stitch has their cultural advisor, Moana has their, you know, and it's true, it's you know, and but for what happened with Wind in the Reckoning was we're on the Big Island. Right. So David's relationship with the Fruin family, they were there, they have a halau, they do a whole show, they're Hawaiian. That was the right pick for this. He trusted them, and that's how we did that show. On a new show I'm doing next with the 10 cultural advisors, it's a way bigger series coming out next year on Apple, and we had to bring a cultural advisor particular to each thing, wardrobe, canoes, lua, which is Hawaiian battle, language. So it depends on the project, mm-hmm. but it's really, really important to have a cultural advisor. Right. And a lot of times when Hollywood films come in, you know, we have to educate, you know, I mean, that's kind of what happens. You know, it's not a bad thing. It's just that there's a perception of what Hawaii is about. This is what happens all the time. And the story's coming in from the outside in, not mm-hmm. inside out. So our job, the responsibility as a producer, is to really be on that front line and navigating and supporting and educating and deciding, who do we need on this project?
I mean, don't know if we should name names, but you know, there are movies out there where like George Clooney is a descendant of Princess Puahi Bishop, and it's like, maybe not, you know. there's projects out there that maybe could have used the cultural consultants, but anyway. just since you mentioned it, are we allowed to talk a little bit about the new project?
Yeah,
so this Apple project, can you give us a little bit of a preview?
Yeah, it's Jason Momoa's Chief of War, which is his new, I'm sure a lot of people know about it. It's coming out next year, I mm-hmm. believe. But it was, we shot it in 2022. It's, you know, I feel like Wind in the Reckoning is the stepping stone to mm-hmm. what this is. And this is obviously on a grand scale, humongous budget, you know. I'm going to be really interested to see what the reaction is going to be, because it's beautiful. And we, you know, we shot on the Big Island, on the lava fields. And, you know, it's very... I would say as authentic as it could be, mm-hmm. because Jason's really about that. Mm-hmm. And he was adamant about having Hawaii producers on it. So me and I don't know if anyone knows Brian Kailan, he's a famous waterman. But it was our responsibility to really educate these producers. It was a big job, and it wasn't easy, because they don't know your value until something goes wrong. Mm. And that's what happened, you know, is on a few occasions. So we're always trying to fix things, you know, and we're trying to
educate.
Well, there's a question that I did want to address, and it sort of came up in my introductory remarks, so I did want to ask it, but it has to do with the representation of violence in this film. This is always sort of a difficult choice to make when it comes to making these kinds of projects, because on the one hand, there's a certain political or like moral imperative to show the brutality of these moments, especially as you were mentioning, Lindsay, like in the history of Hawaiian colonization, so much of the record was written in the English language, mm-hmm. and so much of it perpetuated this myth that Hawaiians never resisted colonization, mm-hmm. that they actually sort of welcomed colonizers through this like the wonderful aloha spirit. It was this openness to outsiders, and it's this insidious myth
right.
that has really been perpetuated through English language historical documents. Of course, it's never been true. Like, there was legal protest, there was armed protest, there was all kinds of protests right from the beginning. So showing the brutality of the repression and the reality of fighting back, I can see, is important. But I'm just thinking of, you know, there's always the risk in these films of the violence coming off as mere entertainment or spectacular in a certain way. And I'm just thinking of this in relationship to some of the discussions that were had around Killers of the Flower Moon, where Lily Gladstone, for instance, you know, got on social media and said, particularly for Indigenous women, like, don't watch this film until you're ready and you feel like you have some support for when you leave the theater, because it's quite violent and quite graphic. So I just wonder, from both an actor's perspective stepping into that space and also from a producer's perspective and also from a Hawaiian perspective, like, how are we making those sort of choices about the balance of sort of representations of violence and the brutality of that history, what ultimately appears on screen?
I think this kind of goes back to my original point of this is a true story, you know? It's like, this is not something we made up and we chose to throw in some really gnarly scenes of violence, you know? This is what happened. If anything, maybe we pared it down.
Yeah.
And this is one story of thousands. So many people, this time of leprosy, imagine that times a thousand of just people getting yanked out of their homes in the middle of the night. There were bounties where you got $10 for a Hawaiian with leprosy that you took over to this island where they were taken to Kalaupapa and left to die. They didn't care if you were 5 or 90. Mm-hmm. You were taken, and it was brutal. It was a brutal time of history. And again, going back to the point of this is the only way we could accurately tell the story. If we shied away from the violence that was happening, it would have been history repeating itself of them being like, oh, it really wasn't that bad. It was that bad. And if we're going to take on a story of this magnitude, we wanted to make sure that people, you felt it, you know? Like, it hurts to watch, and it hurt to live it. And as modern-day Hawaiians, it reminds us of what we've gone through and what we've overcome and the strength that our ancestors had. You know, we take great pride in our ancestors in Hawaii. So to see moments like this where they fought back, you know, for Killers of Flower Moon, it's, I think, almost we have the opposite, where that one felt heavily told by, like, the white man's perspective, you know, whereas for us, I feel like this was, like I said, the Hawaiian's voice and showing that we defended ourselves. You know, we didn't go quiet in the night. We, as Ko'olau and Pi'ilani, we took our culture, we took our history, and we made sure it wasn't buried, you know?
Right.
They made sure to stand by what our morals were, our beliefs, ohana, God, you know, things like that were the things that we were taught and raised with, and you can't just come in and wipe that clean from our slate, and they fought back. So yeah, it gets violent. It's not pretty. It's not fun to see. But I know for experience of the Hawaiians that have come through so far, they felt like the mana, the strength, like mana that, you know, that our ancestors had. And it was hard. It is that same idea of being prepared to see when you see those scenes of what happened to the Hawaiians, it hurts, you know, it stirs something in you, in your na'au that, that hurts, but it also heals to know that they fought for what they believed in, what we believe in still currently to this day. So yeah, I know, I think, I think if someone else honestly took on this project, they might have glorified it more. So I think we tried to toe the line of being accurate, but still telling it in the poetic way Pi'ilani wanted it to be told. So, yeah.
I just think it was honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, real. And when it is, you feel that, you know. And I agree, we did it in a very, I wouldn't say subtle way, but we wanted to, it was very poetic, I think, even in the way we shot it, you know. And but there are scenes in there still when Sisa's role, you know, that whole thing. It was like, oh, gosh. You know, like Henry Ankuzik, we should mention, too. He lives in Hawaii, too. He's from Lost, and he remained in Hawaii. And He was so good in this role, too. You hate him, but you love him.
Yeah. You know? Hate him,
but I mean, Jason Scott Lee was just amazing to just work. I mean, the whole cast, you know, I mean, being together, because we couldn't go anywhere. But really, even after hours, after we wrapped, we sit and, you know, we'd have these campfire stories, you know, and everyone, and they think about, if you know about Hawaii and Hawaiians and locals, we love to have music. So we'd be at a campfire playing the ukulele, and all the cast and crew would get together. But it was, you know, I think approached really delicately and respectfully. Our prop master is amazing.
Yeah.
He actually, I think, found the original rifle or something like that, and was able to, you know, just everybody cared about this movie. That's right. One thing I should say is every cast member and crew member, there was a reason why they were there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really loved seeing a film like this finally be made. There hasn't been any other film feature, and the quality and the production value of it, it's such a little budget, you know, and our DP, Scott Mason's amazing, and but, you know, I should also say, you know, it's the first film that was out of Hawaii to be Oscar qualified, so we were in the Oscars this year, and Independent Film, we got into everything, but it's really hard to... It's great, but we have no money to campaign it.
FYC, so when you're,
so like you're up against Ferrari and Killers of the Flower Moon. Okay. Anyway, but at least we got, you know, our voices and our faces out there. You know, I mean, it's and Jason's show's next, but like it's not going to stop.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know we have some time. I want to make sure we have some time to take some audience questions, but I did want to wrap up on a slightly different note, because we did start by watching that brief piece about ICANN.
Oh, okay.
And what I find across all of your answers is just the importance of being able to cultivate local talent and to be able to create capacity in Hawaii to tell Hawaiian stories. So I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit more about the work that you do with ICANN and how you are involved as well, Lindsay, and the kind of work that you're doing to build that capacity so the stories are better going forward.
Yeah, we started it a year ago, actually after Chief of War. Me and my two partners been in the business over 30 years, and what we kept seeing was Hawaiian roles not going to Hawaiian actors. Mm. They were going to Maori actors, you know, New Zealand, which actually rightfully so, you know, the Cliff Curtises, you saw in our video, Cliff Curtis, Raina Owen, I mean, Once Were Warriors, if you folks know that film, it's 30 years this year, we're celebrating, but it was heartbreaking, even for Jason. I mean, casting, the writers, the creators, you know, one, to have to go to New Zealand to shoot the show, and then two, a lot of the roles that should have gone to our Hawaiian actors didn't. Mm. And a lot of that is because of studios, there's expectations, and not having enough credits and all this, and it's catch 22, how do you get the credits if you don't get cast, you know?
Right.
So anyway, we created ICANN, and it's all about elevating Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders in the film industry in Hawaii. So what we did is we started with acting, because that's a little hanging fruit, and brought in Cliff and Raina and everybody from the Chief of War cast, actually, Luciani Buchanan. And what makes it different, it's not just an acting class, but it's actors teaching it. So it's about their journey, and every actor is different.
Mm-hmm.
So the actors, our local students, get, you know, an experience and access that they would never get, you know, and being able to talk to someone like Cliff Curtis, because Once Were Warriors was such a big film for Hawaii and for actors, for filmmakers, because they look like them, you know, and they're like, oh my God, we can be actors. So anyway, it's gone really fast, and we measure success differently, but we, you know, it's been amazing. We have a writers program as well. We have 10 Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders in the program. We're in phase two of acting. We're going to start stunts. We're going to do a lot of different things. But we brought in Lindsay a couple weeks ago to teach the class, a class. And we're doing one next week with Tia Carrera's coming in, and Iowane Goodhue, who's in Next Go Wins.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaiian boy, he's actually going to teach a Olelo class to the actors. I should just say to end on this, it's not about teaching them to become Hawaiian actors, because there's not going to be a lot of those roles. It's about being a really great actor the best you can, so that you can meet those studio standards and also, you know, elevate our stories on a global scale. And so we're working with shows in Hawaii right now. High Surf Rescue's there right now, and you know, working with them to say, hey, here's some talent, here's our new talent, please get them in for reading, you know, things like that. It's access and just getting internships and mentorships, all that into the film industry. But Lindsay was amazing with the class, so
yeah. Yeah, Angie's humble. This ICANN is changing the game. Like, if I had that when I first started acting, I probably wouldn't even have to leave Hawaii. Like, most of us had to leave because there's no industry in Hawaii. It's so small and not accessible and not livable that we all had to make the move. You know, we leave our families and we leave our home and we go to another place. So seeing this now, I had the honor of going back and teaching, and I'm talking to kids who never had to leave home and they still get to live where they love. And we love our home, and they're still acting and they get so much access to things that just are insane. And what she's doing is really insane. Like, she doesn't understand it, but it's the type of things that are going to change the direction for Hawaiians in the industry, and that's what we need. I always say the only way we're going to be able to cast authentically and get to tell the stories authentically if we're the people in power. Until the people in power care, nothing's going to change, you know? So it's like whether we can get the people up at the top to care and start listening to us, or again, if not, we'll just take the roles ourselves and we'll be the directors, we'll be the writers, we'll be the studio heads. And starting them off in that path. When I started, and I'm not that old, okay? Like, I started like 9, 10 years ago. There was nothing. It was nothing. There was, and I was the black sheep on the island. People thought I was crazy and so weird to pursue this industry, and it made no sense. I was just very lucky. I had parents that supported me and didn't understand me, but supported me. And so now that it's not such a weird thing, that's where we can start to make the change with things like our government and, you know, our the tax breaks to make it make sense that productions want to come to Hawaii. So they want to cast the local actors, you know. It's there's so many levels and layers to this that something like ICANN is what we needed to, like, kick it into high gear to get people to realize. Because, yeah, there is a standard that's expected in the industry. We're not going to change the industry. So if we can start to get our Hawaiian talent up to that level, that's going to be such a game changer, because I as an actress just want to be able to be a strong actor, like she said, that just gets casted for roles. Like, I honestly get caught in this corner all the time where I only get casted as Hawaiian or Polynesian, you know. I want to be the next doctor on Grey's Anatomy, you know. Like, I don't want to have to be this all the time. So right. I think once we have more of us, then they'll start to see us as part of the industry. There's just not enough of us yet. We're still so new. That's great. So ICANN's going to do that.
Well, I love that. But I just want to take a brief moment to thank you both so much for being here.
You.
It's so special to have you back, Angela.
Thank you.
Chuck brought me this film, like, literally last summer. It was, like, maybe last July or something we started working on this, and it's just such a delight to finally have you here, and it's so nice to meet you, Lindsay. Thank you again to our wonderful performers from earlier this evening, and thank you all for being here, and do join us again at the Pollock Theater.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.